Shout out to Claritin for supporting this episode and providing us with samples. So if you guys are anything like me and you struggle with allergies, raise your hand because I am right there with you. I get super itchy throat, itchy ears, and I sneeze like a crazy woman. And it really does prevent me from wanting to take my daily walks with my husband. But luckily for those of us who live with the symptoms of allergies, we can live Claritin Clear with Claritin D. It is designed for serious allergy sufferers. Claritin D has two powerful ingredients in just one pill that relieves your allergy symptoms and decongests your nose so you can breathe better. This double action combination of prescription strength allergy medicine and the best decongestant available relieves sneezing, a runny nose, itchy and watery eyes, and an itchy nose and sinus congestion and pressure with an ease, which is exactly what I need. So I have been using them anytime that I have allergies, which has been many, many times. I have found that it has definitely helped me so much where I can go outside again and enjoy my day. So if you guys are ready to live life as if you don't have allergies, it is time to live Claritin Clear. It is fast and powerful relief. It's just a quick trip away. Find Claritin D at the pharmacy counter. Ask for Claritin D at your local pharmacy counter. You don't even need a prescription. Go to Claritin.com right now for a discount so you can live Claritin Clear. Use as directed.
Our mind is not our brain. Our mind and brain are separate, and the mind changes the brain.
What can the everyday person that maybe can't afford counseling, or what can the person do when they're listening to this and they're like, okay, that's amazing and I'm excited, but what are the practical steps in implementing that in their life? Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the podcast. My name is Juniana Mapola. If you are new here, and happy, happy Tuesday. If you're listening to this on a Tuesday, I post these every single Tuesday. I am back with another episode. Now, for me, it is a Thursday. I'm actually going to go see the Barbie movie tonight. Now, I'm not exactly sure when this podcast is coming out, but the Barbie movie came out, I think, last week, and I haven't seen it yet. I might have some thoughts. I don't know, but I'm excited to see it. So today's been good. I've just been in the thick of wedding planning. It's been really good. We've been just checking off all these things off our list. And I've been enjoying it still at the same time. And let's see, I probably will have been already traveling at this point. We are going to LA for our engagement photo shoot. So I'm not sure when this is going to be posted, but check my Instagram to see our engagement pictures because I'm so excited. I like literally cannot wait. And Caleb and I are going to go pick up some cute little outfits for that tonight. So we're pretty pumped. But you guys, so this podcast is called Happy and Healthy because I really want us to be healthy, happy, thriving queens and kings here. I really, really do. And something that I'm really passionate about is also talking about things to better our minds and our brains and the mental health aspect because it plays such a big part into all of our lives. Like half the reason why we do anything is because of the things that we're thinking, the thoughts or the lies we believe or what we've been taught since we were young. And so I am so, so excited about bringing on Dr. Caroline Leaf. Dr. Caroline Leaf has so many credentials and she is just a smart cookie. She really is. And I have been trying to get her on for so long because I've read her books in the past. Sorry, I'm like Googling her bio as we speak because she has so many credentials that I just don't want to mess it up. I've been trying to get her on for such a long time because I read her book, How to Switch on Your Brain. I had a friend give it to me. Genuinely so beneficial. I definitely like recommend you guys check it out. So Dr. Caroline Leaf is a communication pathologist and a clinical neuroscientist whose passion is to help people see the power of the mind to change the brain and find their purpose in life. And so, she is incredible. And we had the best conversation talking about trauma, generational trauma, bad red flags in counselors or therapists, ways to practically change your brain, to create new habits, how long it takes to see changes in your life, what to do if you've experienced like some really hard things in your life. I mean, we talk all about it. She gives so much amazing practical advice and tips and things that we can implement into our life. And so I think this episode is going to be such a blessing and I really hope you guys enjoy today's episode. So let's just get right into it and bring on Dr. Caroline Leaf. All right. Well, Dr. Caroline Leaf, welcome to Happy and Healthy. Thank you so much for coming on today. How's your day going?
It's going really well. Thank you so much. It's lovely to meet you, Janine. And did I say Janine or Janine?
Oh, gosh. Janine. Yeah, Janine.
Sorry, I got thrown there for a second. I thought, I'm sure it's Janine.
That's okay. And you're from South Africa, right?
Yes, I'm from South Africa, but I've been in the States for the last 15 years almost, and I travel all over the place. So, and I'm Swiss by marriage and Italian by birth, so I don't know what I am at this stage.
That's amazing. That's kind of how I feel. My dad's from Germany, my mom's from Guatemala, and then I was born in the States. So I'm even like, what am I? And it's kind of fun. It's kind of fun to be a little ambiguous, you know?
It is. It's great. It's lovely.
Well, thank you so much for coming on the podcast. My podcast is Happy and Healthy. And really, my goal is to help people become happy and healthy, whether that is mentally, physically, spiritually, and emotionally. And a lot of the topics that we do talk about are regarding all the things that we're going to talk about today, whether that's mental health or depression or anxiety or things we're struggling with. But a lot of my followers did submit questions for you. And I wanted to, because some of these things I'm like, I don't know how to talk about that because I'm not, you know, a professional. So I'm really excited to have you on because you are the pro. I've watched a lot of your interviews. I've read your book, Switch On Your Brain, and you've also recently released a new book. So I'd love for you just to introduce yourself, who you are, all your background, and also your new book.
Absolutely. Well, thank you very much. It's great to be with you, Janine. And I'm actually by profession, I'm a psychoneurobiologist. It's the area of study that I'm in, psychoneurobiology, which stands for mind, brain, body. And I trained as a communication pathologist and audiologist and neuroscientist. So I've been in this whole brain mind thing for nearly 38 years now. I practice clinically for 25. I still do a lot of research. I don't practice anymore because I do basically write books and do conferences, and we've created a mental health technology platform, excuse me, which is really great because mental health, as we're going to be talking about today, is something that's confusing, and we're trying to help it and make it accessible and affordable for people to be able to empower themselves to manage their mental health. So that's a big focus of my research, of the work. I've brought my clinical expertise into that platform, and the most recent book that I've released that is coming out on the 8th of August is to help parents help their children with their mental health. You know, there's a lot of crisis, as we know, globally with mental health, but with children it's really got bad. And I basically help parents, you know, this book is to help parents to understand how to manage their mind and help the child to manage their mind. Because even though we talk about the crisis being in mental health, it's actually, the crisis is not actually in mental health. Mental health is the result. The crisis is in how we're managing our mind. Mm. If we don't manage our mind properly, that's going to lead to all kinds of repercussions. So there's a little bird's eye view.
That's so good. Wow. And that's an incredible book that I'm sure will be extremely necessary and important for even like young moms that are trying to think about these things going ahead. Because I mean, for me, as you know, wanting to be a mom one day, the thought of having children in this world, to be honest, it kind of scares me because I'm seeing the decline of people's mental health. We saw what 2020 did to a lot of people. And so can you just kind of give a little bit more information in that book? Like, what are some practical giveaways or practical takeaways, more should I say, that people can start thinking about now as they're learning to raise children or want to have kids? What are things that they can work on now so that they're blessing their future kids?
It's a great question. So this is what the book looks like. It's obviously reversed on camera, but it's how to help your child clean up their mental mess. The book prior to that, which it's not on my table here, but it's called Cleaning Up the Mental Mess. So this book that's coming out for 2 to 10 year olds, but for parents, it's geared to parents to help children. And then the Cleaning Up the Mental Mess, that's for basically adolescents onwards. So both sides of the coin. Then I also have an app and all that. So everything we talk about today, you'll find in the book, the books, in the latest book for children, and then in the app, which is basically me giving you therapy and walking you through the whole process of how to manage your mind, and which we'll talk about today in terms of mental health. Some practical things, well, the overarching concept is that our mind is not our brain. Our mind and brain are separate, and the mind changes the brain. So we can't change what's happened to us, and lots of things are still going to happen to us. Those happen. But what we can do is we can change what they look like inside of our mind-brain-body connection, which is our psychoneurobiological network, and therefore influence how that plays out into the future. So that's a hopeful message, because things happen to us. Traumas have happened of various different, on a scale of 1 to 10, the 10s being the worst and 1s being the day-to-day stuff. And all those things affect us, and we're still going to go through things. But if we don't manage them, they will spill over into all areas of our life. And as we know, early childhood things affect adulthood. And as we know, everyone's pretty familiar with the fact that chronic unmanaged toxic stress will lead to all kinds of physical and mental problems. And so we can be proactive. So a big takeaway from that book is you can't change your story, but you can change what it looks like in your mind, brain, body network, and therefore how it plays out into your future. And therefore equipping children to tell their story.
That's so good. And you're right. It is very, very hopeful to hear that, of knowing like, oh, I can change this, or this is not, you know, not all hope is lost in this situation. And I think the reason why I was really drawn to your content was that you were the first Christian psychologist that I had really come across. And one of my friends gave me your book, and she was like, you need to read this, because I think I was really stuck in a victim mentality. And I'm like, it's just going to be like this. And you talked about being able to change our neuro pathways. Is that correct?
Psychoneurobiological network. So I, as a clinical neuroscientist, what I do is I work in the connection between the mind and the brain. So it's not just in the psychological realm, it's actually helping people to understand that the psychology drives the neurology. And so if you think of it like this, if you're dead, your brain's disintegrating, it's doing nothing. So is your body. But when we're alive and we're having this conversation and we're in life and we're doing all the things we're doing, it's our mind that's actually that life force. So our mind is where the action happens, and then the mind uses the brain and the body respond. And so that is very hopeful, because that means that every experience that we have, like this conversation, for example, is being built by the mind into the brain as tree-like structures in the brain, also into the body. So the experiences become part of us, mind, brain, body network, mentally and physically, via our mind. So mind's doing the work. And that means, what it also means is that our brain can change. Because as we are having this conversation now, our brain is changing. Your brain changes from the moment you open your eyes to the moment you go to sleep. And at nighttime, it's also changing, but it's being prepared for the next day. So if our brain is always changing, because our mind is always changing and the mind changes the brain, we can therefore change things. That's the key thing here. Humans are messy. Life is messy. Life is challenging. It's okay to be a mess. That messiness shows up in the mind, brain, body network, but we don't have to stay in that mess. We can literally capture that and rewire the network in the brain, the changes in the body, and in the fields of the mind, three places, by understanding how our mind works.
Wow. That's so powerful.
That's exciting, because it gives a lot of hope to people.
So I was going to say, when, you know, if someone is listening to this and they're like on fire now, they're like, yes, like, let's do it. What can the everyday person that maybe can't afford counseling, or what can the person do when they're listening to this and they're like, okay, that's amazing and I'm excited, but what are the practical steps in implementing that in their life?
So that's a very important place to start, because our current philosophy of mental health, or the messaging that most people are getting, is pretty much all about how if you have symptoms, then you've got to eliminate the symptoms get a diagnosis and eliminate the symptoms. Now, that sounds like a good idea, but it's great when it comes to something like diabetes or heart problems or immune system, you know, diseases of the brain and the brain and body. But when it comes to life and mental health and mind and our humanity and our experiences in life, that just looking for a symptom to eliminate is not going to solve the problem. So how we show up in any one moment, and when I say show up, like right now, you and I are showing up. We're showing up, we have emotions, we have behaviors, we have a perspective, our body's responding, you know, we're both alert, etc. That's how we're showing up in this moment. So we could analyze how we're showing up in this moment, and it's a good conversation, and we can get to the thought that's building around this conversation is about mental health and all that stuff. Let's say a person has a toxic experience, so they may be bullied, or they're getting bullied at work or in the marriage or at school or something like that. That is also being built by the mind into the brain and the body and the mind, so three places. And that then is affecting how we show up. So the first place to start is if something, how am I showing up in the moment? Standing back and observing ourselves and looking at ourselves and thinking, okay, I'm feeling very disturbed at the moment. Maybe you've just woken up, or maybe you've just got back from a meeting, or something's happened, or you have an email, just received an email or something, is to analyze, how am I showing up in this moment? What are the signals telling me? Maybe I'm feeling very anxious, maybe even panicky. So that would be emotions. My body's tensing up. Maybe I've got heart palpitations, bodily sensation. Maybe my behaviors are getting maybe irritable with your kids, or getting snappy with your colleagues or whatever. So the way that you're behaving. And then the perspective, oh gosh, this has happened again. It's always going wrong or something like that. So it's how you're looking at life. So you would look at those signals, but they don't tell you much detail yet, but just looking at those four categories of signals, which obviously can break down into a lot of detail, those four signals will bring the thought that this is coming from into the conscious mind. And then we can start saying, okay, well, why am I going through all of this? And you sequentially work through a process, and that aligns with how the mind-brain-body network builds the experiences in the first place. So how the mind gets stuff into the brain is a process. So how we fix ourselves is to look at the how we show up, and using that same process, deconstruct, and to find to work out a better way of moving forward. So if you're battling with extreme depression, and withdrawing, and battling with the relationships, and just very, it's sort of looking, life sucks, that kind of thing, and it's really bad, it's impacting your daily functioning, it's just sit still, take stock, and start with those four categories, and then work through a process, a sequence, which we can get into. It's called the neurocycle, which is how we make that mind-brain-body network work to rewire it, so that we can change how we're going to show up. And that's a process. It's a daily planned and guided process that makes changes happen. So it's not just doing a bunch of different things, like a bit of prayer and a bit of meditation, a bit of breathing and a nice technique here. It's being very deliberate, very organized, very intentional, planned and guided sequence daily over time. And the time, I can talk about the time that it takes to actually form habits that will create change in your life, because it doesn't happen overnight. It takes minimum of 63 days and sometimes multiple cycles. So that's, if you really want to change and get things under control in your life and even grow your resilience, you need to be planned, guided, daily sequence that aligns with the mind-brain-body network, and do that over time. And it starts with being aware of how you're showing up.
Listen, guys, Janine and I have been married for 6 months, and the reason why it is a beautiful marriage, it's because of Thrive Market. Thrive Market, thank you so much for sponsoring this episode. We genuinely love you so much because of Thrive Market. We're able to save so much time through ordering all our grocery and household essentials through the app or website. Guys, it's just a huge stress relief. And you guys also know I have gut issues, like really, really, really bad. So finding, food with top quality ingredients is super crucial for me. And Thrive Market not only does that, but they restrict over 1,000 harmful ingredients like artificial flavors, high fructose corn syrup, and a lot more. And guys, if you're parents and you need to find organic kid snack, they have low sugar alternatives and high protein essentials. Jenny and I are also training for our marathon, so it is so beneficial that we can find all of our protein options and snacks through Thrive Market. And guys, save time and money and shop Thrive Market today. Go to thrivemarket.com/healthy for 30% off your order, plus a free $60 gift. That's THRIVE market.com/healthy, thrivemarket.com/healthy.
Wow. I feel like I need to go back and write all that down, because I'm getting so much good information right now. And it is interesting, because I was going to say to you, how long do you think that typically takes? And I think when we're listening to other podcasts, everyone is just if you do this daily, you're going to see changes. But no one really does talk about the actual length that it takes to genuinely see true change in your life, especially when you're probably unwiring things from childhood and childhood trauma or things that happened 5 years ago. And I'm sure you've heard of that book, Your Body Keeps Score. How true is it that your body does keep score?
Well, a lot of the work I do as a psychoneurobiologist in the research is to look at what's happening in the body physically. when you have an experience. So not just looking at the psychology, but looking in three places. As you have an experience, it goes into your mind, your brain, and your body. So the body keeping the score is the body part. So what we see in the research that we do is that we know that every single cell of your body, I mean, this is kind of overwhelming if you, but the numbers I'm going to throw at you now. So we have 37 to 100 trillion cells in our brain and our body. And as we are talking now and we're listening to each other and having this conversation and the listeners and viewers, at 400 billion actions per second, you're converting this conversation into a network in your brain, and it's going into every single cell of your body. In the brain, it looks like a tree. And in the cells of your body, it looks like little vibrations inside protein skeleton. So every single cell of our body, all 37 to 100 trillion, had this little protein skeleton. And I know this is quite sciencey, but the reason that the body keeps the score, which was such a great title, is because it's inside your body. It's inside your brain. It's also inside your mind. And there's this mind as a gravitational field. So think of a field, like a sort of, you know, think of a wavy thing that, you know, when you look at a podcast, you can see little waves. Think of a tree and think of a little structure inside a cell. And that is where this conversation is going. And so if this is a good conversation, this is going to be helpful. But what happens if it was that childhood trauma, if it was that persistent abuse, if there was an issue that's going on in a marriage or whatever? So it's toxic, so it's not healthy. That's also going into all those different places. Or someone who's a combat veteran, or someone, you know, child who's suffered from extreme years of sexual abuse or something like that. That is inside of you. So that collectively works together and influences how you show up. So at school, not concentrating, or in a relationship, not really committing, or feeling a lot of depression and affecting how you are sleeping. And, you know, all the different ways, you know, getting really worked up about things, maybe being irritable, maybe whatever, how we showing up, the patterns in our life, the more there's an established pattern of emotions and behaviors and perspectives and so on, the more we know that that's an established cause, there's an experience that's been embodied. And so what we need to do is that thing that isn't just fixed, it doesn't just stay stuck, it actually grows all the time. So until we deal with it, it just keeps growing. Because why? Because it's part of all the networks that are driving your ability to function as a human. So you may not consciously remember an abuse maybe as a child or the details of something, but you're forming a new relationship and the person says something, and there's something about what they say triggers something in you, and that then it just affects how you bond or how you discuss something or whatever the case may be. And that's because there's an undealt trauma. And that undealt trauma isn't a nice-looking tree. The trees are made of proteins in the brain. The proteins have got to fold in a certain way. If they don't fold properly, they create a problem. They create a problem like a virus would create a problem. So your immune system and your body, which keeps the score, start working with the mind to fight that. So you get a little bit of a war going on in the mind-brain-body network, and that pops through into our conscious mind as like feeling disturbed, not feeling great, like feeling things in your body, feeling things in your emotions. And we should never ignore those, because every time we get that sensation or that combination of sensations of those four signals, emotions, behaviors, perspective, and bodily sensations, if we don't do something, pay attention, embrace them, process and reconceptualize them, they go back into the unconscious even bigger than before, with even more influence. And then eventually that just accumulates and accumulates, and you can land up in a really bad place.
Wow. So if someone is feeling that, like they're feeling off, they're feeling like, okay, something's not sitting right, what would you recommend them do? So do they stop and they say, okay, why is this bothering me? Do they just take an audit? Like, what should they do when they're trying to figure this feeling out?
That's an excellent question. So basically, if you're at work or somewhere that you can't take the time to work through something, because you're going to need a little bit of time to do the sort of take the audits. I like to use, that's a great way of putting it. So in that moment, just maybe you've still got to go to another meeting, maybe you've got to still look after your kids, whatever it is that you've got to do, you may not have the time then. So just acknowledge. First thing is just to say, it's okay to be a mess. Something's disturbing me. I'm not sure what it is. And if you can, just in your iPhone, just write down a few things. Just quickly write down how you're feeling, how it feels in your body, you know, what you're doing. And it might be four words and what your perspective is. And just like make a little note then, say, okay, when I get home or when I've got a moment, I'm going to actually sit down and explore this. So it's to train yourself to be self-regulated like that, to stand back and observe yourself. It's like getting a multiple perspective advantage on how you function. It's almost like watching yourself through a lens. So it's training, and the more you train yourself, the more skilled you become at this, and the more you tune into all of these signals, not just your body, but you want to tune into all four categories of signals. And then you need to take the time. You can't just be aware. So that step is getting you aware. Once you're aware and you now have, let's say you've got the time to sit down and work through it, you then need to focus on the next step. So you look at those four signals, you say how you feel, what you're doing, etc., that I explained. Then you would reflect. And reflection is asking yourself why. It's like shining a light through a prism and it comes out with color on the other side. Mm. And then you start asking the why, which takes you a little deeper. As you've done these two steps, you've brought that tree into the conscious mind, and on a neuroscientific level, you've weakened the distorted proteins. And in the branches and the roots being the source. And that's a good thing, because now if it's weakened, you can change it.
Wow.
And that's why I say you can't change what's happened to you, but you can change what's in you. So this is the rewiring of the neural pathways concept. We have to get the tree to a point, the thought tree, and the body response to a point where you can make changes. So that first step and second step create that space. If you just meditate or breathe or say a prayer or whatever, that's going to help, but it's brain preparation. So it's not going to make a change, a complete change. You have to wind in these steps. Otherwise, you don't change the networks, and the networks are what are actually going to drive your output. So you, prior to doing those first two steps, and I'll tell you the other steps in a moment, it's always good to do a little bit of brain preparation, which could be anything from saying a prayer, doing some breathing, doing some meditation. There's lots of great ideas out there. Mm-hmm. In my app, I walk you through this, literally walk you through this. In the children's book, I give you ones for children on how children can do it, etc. Then once you've reflected and you've got this activity happening in your brain, now the networks are ready to be rewired. So then you go into a writing process, but it's not journaling. It's basically a brain-mind dump. You just put down whatever thoughts have come up, and literally it's all over the page. The more messy, the more colors, the more pictures and bubbles, just literally dump it down. All of these steps are timed. You don't spend hours on each step. You limit it to two to three minutes per step if you're sitting down. If you're in the moment, you can do it in 10 seconds. So let's say you're in a meeting, you can use the same system very quickly just to help you get yourself together if someone is driving you nuts in a meeting or something like that. So there's two applications, one for the moment-by-moment daily struggles, and the other for the patterns in your life that are disrupting, that are creating sensations of depression and so on. So you'd write it down, then that's a big mess all over the page, and that's really digging deep. It's opening up the roots of the tree. It's activating the entire body to respond, and now the body, your insights increased, that all the energy waves in the brain and the body, etc. So all this sciencey stuff is happening, mm-hmm. and now you can change. And then the fourth step is a reconceptualization. This has happened, what can I do? Then you close the cycle with an act of reach, which could be an affirmation, a prayer, a statement to yourself, like, it's okay, I'm a mess, but I'm getting through this. And you do this daily. You know, we spoke about the time. You mentioned just now, no one talks about the time. People talk about daily routines and all that stuff. You can do all those daily routines, but put them into this framework. Mm. So if you've got a daily routine, put make sure that your routine follows in a framework. If you've got like a little gratitude exercise that you do, don't do it out of this framework, because it's not going to have a long lasting sustainable change. Now, something like a gratitude diary or something like a little quote you love to quote, that would go into step five to carry you through the day. Mm. Each day you're going to learn more. You're not going to solve this in one day. That's why you need to go through the 63 days. So a lot of the research that I've done, and I'm doing a big study at the moment where we are confirming these numbers. And what we see from years of research is that for you're always changing, you're always growing networks. But if they're just little, and they don't have enough energy, they're not really going to influence your life. So you know you've learned something, or you know something, or you've heard that great idea on the podcast, but it's just a little tree. It didn't have enough attention paid to it. Whatever you think about the most grows. So by working daily on something, it keeps growing and getting more and more energy. And when it's got, when it's big enough, think of a plant growing. When it's big enough, then it can actually will be useful. It'll be a change that you will apply in your life on a consistent basis. And that takes a minimum of about 9 weeks.
Wow. Yeah, that is such great, like, practical advice. And I think that's definitely going to bless somebody today. So thank you for sharing all of that wisdom. How do you, because you are a Christian working in the scientific medical field, essentially. How do you kind of implement your faith within some of these practices? Because, you know, I don't know how you feel, but like, is it hard to balance science versus God? Or do you find that to actually be an easy crossover where you're like, no, science proves God and vice versa? So how do you implement your faith within all of this?
Probably because I don't look at it in such sort of very simplistic terms. I look at it as Godness and the hugeness of God. And see, I see myself as being very spiritual. And as the word science comes from the word skura, which means knowledge. And basically what we are doing as humans is we are getting knowledge about ourselves as humans, how to function and how the world works in all the different aspects. So science is very spiritual. There's not really any distinction between them. It's just two sides of the same coin. So there isn't really conflict there. It's just how it's been approached. The religious circles have approached it from a very, it's much better now, but it's, you know, from, science is bad and don't think and everything. But if science is bad, then you can't have the lights in your church because light energy is based on science. So, you know, people can get ridiculous on both sides. So it's a matter of how you look at the picture. I've never seen a problem between spirituality and science. Two sides of the same coin.
Absolutely. I love that. That's so good.
Well, good day to you. It's Joel with The King Country dropping in to let you know that our brand new film, Unsung Hero, is in theaters now.
It's Luke here. We've teamed up with the creators of Jesus Revolution to bring you this adventure of a lifetime. It's a powerful, true story about a family uniting, growing in their faith, and facing the impossible together.
In theaters now, unsunghero.movie for more information.
Rated PG. Parental guidance suggested.
Can I just ask you about this? Because I think when I'm on social media and I'm looking at TikTok, I've seen the word trauma to become a buzzword where everything is associated to trauma. That's trauma, their trauma, this is trauma. Can you talk just more about that, of what is actually trauma, or what are some people being in victim mentality, or what? Because I think it's like, it's all becoming one to where everything is trauma and everything is bad. And it's almost like, I don't know how to differentiate whether like, okay, that was something that was hard or that was actually trauma, you know?
No, it's such a good question. I'm actually really glad you've asked this because it is very confusing. And this is where, you know, social media is a great, great platform, TikTok, everything. It's so they're not the problem, it's how they're managed. And that's how you manage TikTok for yourself, or how you, you know, dive in and don't just accept everything but question. So that's a really great question that you're asking. So yes, the word, this happens from time to time. A word becomes a buzzword and then it just becomes a myth. Like the myth of it takes 21 days to form a habit. It's a total myth. It was never scientific fact ever. So, okay, so coming down to trauma has just become a very, a good word to explain the experiences we have as humans, but it has been a bit confused. So that's why I love to use the scale from 1 to 10, where big trauma stuff is on the 8, 9, 10 scale. So that's your being in a combat zone, being severely sexually or physically abused, being in a constant racist environment, being involved with someone who's who acts out in a lot of narcissistic ways. So there's a lot of bullying and damaging things going on in the relationship. It happens on, you know, it's that kind of trauma, socioeconomic, political. That would be where a person's life is threatened, where their livelihood is threatened, where they, who they are is threatened, etc. So that would be on the 8, 9, 10 of the scale. On the 1, 2, 3, that's the day-to-day stuff, like things that we're messy. Humans are messy. There's no normal brain. That was a study coming out of Yale in 2018, I think it was. There's no perfect brain. There's no normal brain. There's only unique brains. And unique brains are run by unique minds. And it's messy. We don't know what we're going to say in the next moment. We stumble, we falter, we fix it up, we correct, we self-correct. Someone says something to us, we maybe snap back, and if we thought about it for 2 seconds, we wouldn't have snapped. Or that messiness is very much part of our humanity. And so that would be your 1, 2, 3, like maybe snapping at someone, maybe getting irritated in traffic and that kind of thing. The middle of the scale, and that wouldn't be trauma. The middle of the scale would be things that are patterns that are starting to develop, that are starting to disrupt a relationship, your work life, you, how you feel about yourself. So that could be something that you're in a getting involved with a group of people or starting to scroll on social media too much, and you're starting to see, you know, this is the perfect body, which is very, it's happening a lot now. We see with young girls, this is the perfect body. And unless I have that kind of body, I have no value. So where they put their full identity, and that leads to contagion and cutting. And, you know, there's a whole problem going on with that now, because whatever you think about the most is growing. So if you don't help a child to manage that on social media, they're going to get so caught up in that scrolling that it wires into the brain. So that is now moving into the 8, 9, 10. That's becoming a trauma. So what started off as innocent scrolling, but, you know, not a little bit, you know, too much, a pattern is 5, 6, 7, now started becoming a point where that child has total, you know, getting anorexia, you know, battling with eating, maybe cutting, withdrawing. So now that's become it's turned into a trauma. So yeah, we've got to make that distinction. So it's a great question. Things become, you know, TikTok is good and it's brilliant, and it's also got a lot of problems because of any social media platform. Things get caught up, victim mentality, blaming. There's also a trend which has started a couple of years back about everything about how you show up is all your mother's fault. And or all your parents' fault. Now, it's worth spending a bit of moments on that, because it's also trauma related, the trauma experience as a child. Thank goodness we are talking about trauma as a child. And let me tell you, I'm a mother of four. Every mother messes up their child. You can be the best mother in the world. Parenting is messy, but that messiness can be managed. So it's a situation of, oh, I'm sorry I said that. It's owning your mistakes. It's acknowledging and explaining to your child why you maybe got upset or whatever's going. It's not hiding it. It's being honest and open. And so that trend of blaming the parent, I always try to help people to see it in the context of you as a parent were someone's. You were someone's daughter, and they came into their parenting with their baggage, you going into your parenting with your baggage. So unfortunately, no matter how fantastic you think you are as a parent or want to be as a parent, there are things that you're bringing through, plus your own traumas from other things, right. And that comes into the child. So we've got to be careful of that kind of trend of thinking that the parent trauma is the cause of all my thing, which leads to the victim thing. The reason I'm leading there is the victim mentality situation, that it's not my fault, it's everyone else's fault. We've got to get an intrinsic locus of control. We can't have everything, I'm like this because of my mother. I'm like this because of what happened to me. Sure, you are. What happened to you has affected how you're showing up. It's how I started this conversation. But we can't stay stuck there. We can't say, okay, because that happened to me, it's all their fault. Therefore, I don't have any responsibility. What happened to you was terribly unfair. It was hopefully shouldn't have happened. But you have a responsibility to work out how are you going to make the story look different inside of you. The story has happened. The trauma has happened. What are you going to do about changing how it moves, how you move into your future? And so that shift, I'd love to see a little more. And we're trying to create that kind of trend as well on social media platforms to help people to move beyond.
Yeah, I am so, so glad you said that. And I think that's something that needs to be talked about so much more. I think there's so much blame shifting happening, and you're absolutely right. Everyone is blaming their parents when it's like, I did that a lot growing up as well. And then I remembered, oh, my parents are humans too. They had their own traumas that they don't even like to talk about. And I think usually it's because your parents didn't heal that they bring some things down to you, but I don't fault them for it anymore. You know, it's like, I love that you're saying, like, take accountability and responsibility for what you can do, because that's really all we can do is like manage yourself and worry about yourself. And so I'm really glad you mentioned that, because I don't think that's a lot of the, that's like not the popular opinion, I feel like.
And another way of looking at it is, you've explained that, you know, you've summarized it so nicely. Another way of looking at it is that your parents did impact you. You do have the right to work on, like you said, you blamed your parents for stuff because it's stuff that was valid that you did that. But at the same time, we have to balance that by recognizing, as I said, they were someone else's daughter or son, and they therefore have that baggage came through to them, and they're dealing with that stuff. So it doesn't excuse what they've done, but it helps. It puts you in a place where you can actually say, I have the right to work on my stuff, and I'm not dishonoring my parents because they've gone through stuff, but I do need to work on my stuff. And I need to work on the impact of this. And hopefully in working on the impact, there's connection back with parenting. You know, I remember sitting with my mom a few years back. She's 80, she was 85, she's 87 now. And just talking with her and sitting down and saying, you know, she actually said to me, is there anything I did as a parent. It was such a great thing that she did.
Wow.
That set you. And I said, you know, I can't think of anything at the moment because, you know, she's 85. And then I said, oh, there was this one thing that actually, if I think about it now, it did affect me, but I've dealt with it. She said, I actually want to know what I did so I can apologize. And that was such a healthy moment. And I realized when I started speaking to her, actually it had been suppressed in me. I had suppressed it and it had been influencing how I saw myself and came out with my kids. And I had this conversation with my kids after, and they said, yes, this is how it came out with us. And we're so glad you sorted it out with your mother because now it won't affect them anymore. So, but that was, you know, it was a healthy, very healthy conversation.
Wow. That is amazing. And I wish that everybody had that. Like, I think there's so many parents that will never, ever recognize the pain, and they'll never say, how have I hurt you? And they want to be like, that's not my fault. Or they just don't even own up to it. And I think that's like, man, best case scenario if your parent does say that, and I wish everybody had that, but it's a bummer because not everybody does.
No, they don't. And you know what really got my mom doing this is she was watching how I brought my kids up. And
wow,
this is my kids will tell me, Mom, you said this and you did this, and this is how it really, really hurt me, and it really messed me up for a while. And it's very hard to hear that from your kids. My kids are adults now, between the ages of 25 and 32. But to the bonding, the relationship, all four of my kids work for me. They're my best friends. We have a great relationship. Still, if there's issues, we talk about them. And I think that's what this is what I'm trying to teach with this book too, is give children the tools to collaborate with you, to tell their story, to create these deep, meaningful relationships, which build the resilience and then help them cope with the inevitable traumas, big stuff, middle of the road stuff, the 7, 8, 9, which would be considered your little traumas, and then the day-to-day struggles, which aren't traumas. They're just the day-to-day stuff.
Mm, that's so good. Yeah, and it's perfect because someone asked me, they said, how do you deal with generational traumas biblically? And so would there be any advice differently with a biblical perspective, or would you still say like this is typically the best route?
Well, I'd go with the psychoneurobiological network approach, this mind, the science approach, because science is the how-to. So that's without sounding like I'm trying to knock anything. It can be very limiting to say biblical perspective, because where does science come from in the first place? Science is the how-to. So if you talk about capturing a thought, that's a script, that's part of a scripture. Now, how do you do that? What, do you go find them like this? So, you know, it's not, how do you take that scripture, which is almost philosophical, and translate that into the how-to, and that's where science comes in. So therefore, in dealing with some anything, the scientific approach is how I would, is the how-to. Think of it that science is how do you do it? What are the steps? What do I actually do to make those changes in my life?
Yeah. And I'm sure, you know, in your own life as well. And I know with mine, like inviting Christ into that method of like, God, help me change, or help my parent change, or like inviting the prayer into that to pair that with the scripture and the science. Because I think that's kind of what I've had to do. And I do believe prayer works, but I also love that you're giving like practical things that people can do. I think that's so beneficial.
I have to.
Yeah. So another thing that someone asked is, what are some like red flags in a counselor? I know this is kind of a random thing, but you know, when you're trying to find a counselor, it's actually difficult. Like I had a counselor and I was just like, this is not, something just not clicking here. What are some things people should be looking for versus running away from?
First of all, it's a good idea to understand very briefly, this is one of the first questions you asked, is the difference between a counselor and a therapist. So a counselor doesn't have the same training as a therapist. Therapists have more years of training and are trained to deal with more, you know, with bigger things. Counselors are more advisory. Therapists are going more down to the sort of deep root stuff and helping people to deal with those. And there's different methodologies that they can use. So in red flags would be if you sit in therapist or counselor's office and they're doing most of the talking. That's a red flag. They are telling you, giving you long explanations. Sometimes, let me sort of rephrase that. Sometimes you need to give an explanation. So there may be in an hour-long session or something, there may be that you do talk for a good 5-10 minutes or have 5, 10, even 15 minutes as you're explaining a concept and guiding the person through that process. So that is to watch. If as you say something, there's, you feel like you're not getting a word in edgeways. If they talk a lot about themselves, they keep relating everything back to their own experiences. Now and then that's great, but it's not their counseling therapy session, it's yours. The other thing is if they're trying to fix you, no one can fix you. And you'll pick that up in just the way that they come across. No one can fix you. A therapist and a counselor is a facilitator. a therapist, I train up, I have certified facilitators. So I call them facilitators because you're facilitating someone to be empowered to help themselves. You know, and that goes to the whole idea of, you know, accessibility and affordability of mental health. You can go to a therapist and a counselor. That's great. It's great support. But you're not with them every day. And that's another thing. You can't see someone every day. You've got to. It's not practical. It's not affordable. But also, you live with yourself. You wake up with yourself 24/7. What are you going to do with your mind when you wake up in the middle of the night and you've got a panic attack, or you're anxious, or you're in the car driving home from somewhere and you feel overwhelmed? You can't just always pick up the phone or text your therapist. You need to be empowered to help yourself. So your therapist plays a role in the facilitation, the reconceptualization, helping you to reframe and to see things from a different perspective. And it should never be, you should do this. It should be much more one of, here is something you could try, and maybe this is a way of looking at it. You know, so those are some red flags. If you've been told, do this, you must do this, you must do it by this time, that's the only way. You know, those are definite red flags.
Wow, that's really, really good. And I love that you even touched upon knowing that, like, okay, your therapist is not living with you, because I think a lot of people become very dependent upon their therapist, where they're like, I need to talk to my therapist, I'm going to call my therapist. And it's like, exactly what you said. I think that's super important to know that they're like a tool, but they're not the main tool, you know? And I think especially as a Christian and just as a human being that's like trying to work on being more, a little bit more self-sufficient than being dependent upon a counselor. I love that you touched upon that, because I do see that a lot of people become very, very reliant upon their counselor, where they don't even know how to process things or make decisions on their own anymore. And I think that's where that can get a little risky.
No, that's a problem. You know, when I was still practicing, we would actually have a little contract, and I'd say, look, these are the cycles. We work through 63-day cycles. You'll come for 10 sessions. And we are working towards empowerment. We're not working to dependence, we're working to withdrawal. So you need to know how to get to the point where you're not relying on me. As soon as you're relying on me, that's a big red flag. You don't want to rely on your therapist. You've got to learn to rely on yourself. Your therapist is your facilitator, your support, almost like your coach.
Yeah.
And you know, there is a bit of coach doesn't have the if you've got deep trauma, you need to see, you know, a therapist is going to have more knowledge and skills to be able to facilitate and help with that. But so I would have these contracts, and we would evaluate every 10 sessions. We would see, okay, where are we in the cycle? And the point being to try to get decrease, so that you wean off, and then only as needed now and then. So it's very much an empowerment, good therapy, any good guidance for anyone is empowerment based, and there's a pathway to empowerment. And the biggest part of that pathway to empowerment is you first have to know how to manage your own mind. Because then when you manage your own mind, you can go to the therapist and say, okay, I've hit this roadblock. This is where I'm at. Don't know what it means. I need a little bit of clarity here. So you're much more focused and directed. Same thing with kids. You know, this system that I've developed called the neurocycle, as you as a parent learn to do it for yourself, and then you do it with your children, you are giving, and it takes a bit of time to learn it. I make it really easy. I mean, I give you so many simple tools and techniques to make it super easy. But you equipping your child with the ability that if something happens to them, if they're 2 years old and they are being abused by someone, and that sexual abuse happens by people we know. That's the scary thing. Most children are abused by family members or friends of the family. And a 2 or 3 or 4 year old don't know how to talk about that. No one really knows how to talk about that. But by having tools, like, for example, we have this little toy called Brainy, which is a character that we have throughout the book. And here's the little Brainy character that is a superhero that walks your mental health journey with you, and it superpowers the neurocycle. When you teach kids concepts like that, you're giving them the tools to be able to say, pick up this, when they pick this up and they come home from school and they pick this up and they show this to you, and they maybe demonstrate with the toy what's happening, or the toy's crying, the toy's sad. The kids will say that is your clue that something's going on. So, and that's so huge, because sexual trauma very often isn't picked up until a lot of damage has been done. And it's very, 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 I've worked with a lot of sexual trauma, and it's so pervasive in the lifespan that this is really one of the big reasons why I've written this book. Is it's not just about sexual trauma, it's about everything, day-to-day struggles, identity, you name it. But it's if we can get a child from young to say, talk about how this sibling pinching them on the playground or something, or taking their toy or jumping on their bed, something simple like that, if they know how to process that, they can then learn to translate that and get to the point where if something big does happen, they have a way of telling you. And that's really, really important.
Man, that is so powerful. It's exactly what you're saying. Like, a counselor gives you tools to be able to be independent and self-manage yourself, and exactly what a parent is supposed to do. And I think that's exactly right. Like, a counselor, they should be technically saying, we don't want you to come back because we want you to be healthy. We want you to be self-sufficient. And it's funny because my fiance always says, he's like, your therapist has a paycheck too. Like, some bad therapists, I think, in my opinion, they're like, oh, we want you to come back because I got to pay my bills. But I think a good therapist is like, we're giving you the tools so that you are healthy and you can be good on your own. And I think that's so powerful that you talked about that. And I really believe your book is going to bless people. I can already think of some people in my life that I'm like, I want to give that book to them because they do have kids going through very difficult things. And I think, yeah, empowering the younger generation to be able to process these things and not, you know, walk through these traumas that they don't know how to express. I think that's so powerful what you're doing. So thank you, Dr. Caroline Lee, for everything. I think you're an incredible woman, so wise and so gifted, and I love learning from you. So thank you for just taking time out of your day to share all these amazing tips with my audience.
Thank you so much. It's so great meeting you, and I loved your questions. They were really good.
Thank you. Yeah, a lot of these I was like, oh, and I just want to ask her that because I didn't even really plan that much. I just wanted to see where the conversation led. So thank you for being able to entertain them.
Of course, there's always the best conversations anyway. So, well, thank you so much. I've enjoyed being with you.
Of course. And just, will you just let my audience know where they can find you, follow you, and when they can get your book and where they can get your book?
Absolutely. My social media handle is Dr. Caroline Leaf, and I'm on all the platforms, and my webpage, drleaf.com. The book's available wherever books are sold. And it's available from the 8th of August, the new one, but there's a lot of other books available too. And the Brainy Toy, and I have a coloring book, which is great for kids too, to help them with the whole mental health
journey.
It's
so great.
It's available on the site.
Amazing. Well, thank you so much. I really loved this conversation, and I'll be rooting you on from afar.
Thank you.
All right, you guys, that was the episode today with Dr. Caroline Leaf. Please let us know on TikTok, Instagram, whatever. Let us know if you guys enjoyed today's episode, because to me, it was a blessing. You guys can check out all her links down below. And feel free to tag us on Instagram. We love to repost you guys. We also want to feature you guys more often on the Instagram. So whenever you're listening or anything, tag us. We want to reshare them, post them, do all the things. We love seeing your guys' content. So that would be so fun if you guys could tag us. And let me know if this was a blessing. I feel like for me, I need to like re-listen to this episode and then take notes. So this might be one, take some notes and do all that, because there's just so much amazing truth in this podcast. So anyway, thank you guys for hanging out with me today for another episode of Happy and Healthy. Just so you guys know, we will have a merch drop probably coming next month. It's just one item, but it's been something that you guys have been highly, highly, highly requesting again. So stay tuned for that. We're super excited to get those ready to rumble. But love you guys. Thanks for hanging out with me on today's episode of Happy and Healthy. And I'll see you guys again next week. Until then, stay happy and healthy. Bye, guys.